We're going to talk about a book next, the author of which is on the line. We'll speak to her in just a moment. But the book is, it's a good one. I'll read you the blurb. In a large house in London's fashionable Chelsea, a baby is awake in her cot, well fed and cared for. She's happily waiting for someone to pick her up. In the kitchen lie three decomposing corpses. Close to them is a hastily scrawled note. They've been dead for several days. Who's been looking after the baby? Where do they go? Two entangled families. A house with the darkest secrets. Lisa Jewell, what goes through your mind when you're writing these books?
I'm a very sick person. Yeah.
This is what
you're... I'm actually not at all. But yes,
it comes so naturally. What number book
element.
Is this for you?
Number 17.
Okay, and yes. Can you believe that you have been so successful for the last 20 years in not only writing these books but convincing people to read them?
No, this is it feels like a miracle sometimes, particularly because I haven't just always written the same sort of book. I started off writing romantic comedies, and then I've written all sorts of different sort of family dramas and moved very slowly into writing thrillers. And now I've gone terribly, terribly dark, as you can see. And I've been fortunate enough to have maintained a solid career throughout. I've been very, very lucky. Can't quite believe my luck.
Dark family secrets, though, are a happy yes. hunting ground for the author, because there is no depth to which you cannot plumb, given that we know
exactly.
families are all very different and everybody has a skeleton or two in their closet.
Yes. No, families are the font of all sort of darkness, of potential darkness. I mean, even if you're writing about a loner, that loner has come from a family that has impacted on their personality in some way. Everything is in the family. Everything a writer could possibly want to write about.
The Family Upstairs is the book that we're talking about today. This is your latest novel. Tell us a little bit more. I mean, I gave the synopsis there, but effectively it is about this child who was found surrounded by decomposing corpses, which is not an ideal scenario for your start in life. But then she goes on to inherit that house at a later point,
yes.
and it all starts to
yes.
unfold when she goes back to that house.
That's correct, yeah. So she's adopted at 10 months old. She knows her parents have died. She's been told in a car crash, and she knows that she's got something left in trust for her by her birth parents. And she has no idea what it is until her 25th birthday, which is when she discovers that it's an 8-bedroom mansion in Chelsea. And her name is Libby. And at the start of the book, she's selling kitchens for a living in St. Albans. And her journey is really the journey of obviously discovering who she really was. But she's like my detective character. So she's the one who unpeels all the layers to find out what really happened in that house all those years ago and what happened to all the missing people. I mean, that's really what the story's about. So the other two characters in the book are two of the missing people, and we see their stories gradually leading back to the house.
Mm, and there is a cult element to this as well, as we find out as the story wears on.
Correct, yes. I mean, it's not sure. It's quite vague at the outset. The bodies that are found in the kitchen are wearing black robes, and the notes suggest that they were part of a suicide pact, that they were part of some sort of cult. But yes, that's all thrown up into question as the book goes on, and it becomes less and less clear what really happened in the house and what really happened to the people.
Well, the black robes would make it somewhat suspicious, to say the very
least.
Yes,
indeed.
I was kind of slagging you over the dark recesses of your mind, but when you're researching something like this, where do you start? Because you might come up with the concept of what yeah. might be in that house, but you do have to dig around to find real world. I suppose, credibility in some way, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, not necessarily digging around. I have to confess that most of it is actually inside me already. But sometimes real life just sort of coincides with what you're writing. And, you know, I started writing that book, and then around the time that I was building up these layers of the story of these poor children trapped in this house, the story that broke on the news about that couple in California who had 13 children who'd all been chained to their beds and what have you. And so you feel encouraged that whatever's going on in the dark recesses of your mind is nowhere near as bad as what's actually happening in the real world, which is, yeah, sort of encouraging.
Yeah, well, it is. The real world is often a lot scarier than what might even come out of a fictitious mind. You
exactly.
mentioned the fact that this is your 17th book. I think your last one only came out at Christmas. So is there a conveyor belt in your head?
Oh.
Or are you going to slow down at some point soon?
That's not quite. It's not quite. No, it came out in Christmas at Christmas in America. So I don't know if you maybe were in America and saw it come out there at Christmas. Yeah, I normally publish in the summer, so I publish a book a year, which sounds prolific, but then I know other writers who publish two or three books a year, so I feel quite lazy in comparison. But yeah, that's the treadmill I'm on, the creative treadmill, book a year.
Yeah, well, we had a wonderful author with us yesterday who was on her second novel, and she was telling us about her creative process. Is it harder when, you know, the expectation is on you to produce a good book?
It's always hard because, without wishing to blow my own trumpet, all my books always get good feedback, you know. I always get a positive response to my books, and I'm always getting that positive response to my book at publication time, which is right when I'm in the middle of writing the next book. And then that throws me into complete panic that I'm going to let everybody down and they really like the last book and the book I'm writing at the moment just isn't up to scratch and everybody's going to be terribly disappointed. So it's just an ongoing cycle. It happens every single year. Complete confidence crisis.
How do you start? Because, okay, you finalize a manuscript, it goes to the publisher, they go, that's fantastic. Yes. We're really, really happy with that, Lisa. Thanks very much. Looking forward to the next one. And then do you find yourself locked in an attic room, banging your head off a wall, going, where's the next one going to come from for a while, or does it naturally start to flow?
That has happened. That has happened, and I didn't actually bang my head off the wall. it's happened a couple of times, and what I tend to do is just walk around without sorting my head and just see what lands in there. Showers are good places as well for ideas to land. But that doesn't happen very often. Most times, thank God, and touch wood, I've already got an idea in mind before I've delivered the one before. So I try not to panic. If there's no idea there, I try not to panic and I go for some long walks and then something will come to me and I'll leap on it greedily.
But when you say something will come to you, is it you see a couple walking through a park with a buggy?
Or
you walk past a slightly creepy looking house in Chelsea and you go, well something interesting could have happened there.
That's absolutely correct.
Yeah, it's a bit of a jump though from the, and I don't mean to denigrate it in any way, the kind of commercial women's fiction that you started out, which is the point where you're doing these kind of psychological thrillers, these deep, dark thrillers now. How did you manage that route? I mean, you obviously started at a point where you thought, well, this is what will work. And then you've ended up with The Family Upstairs.
I've never actually thought that I would do specifically that I was doing something that would work. When I wrote my first book, I didn't think it was going to work at all. I couldn't imagine that anyone would want to publish it or that it would be popular in any way. But I put it out there and I got really lucky and I hit the market at exactly the point at which readers and publishers wanted books about young women living in London. So I just, it's a zeitgeisty thing. I wrote the right book at the right time and I got really lucky. And then I wouldn't say I've jumped into psychological thrillers. It's not been a jump because I've been doing this for 20 years and it's been a very slow transition. And I've been through sort of all sorts of different shades of fiction to get to where I am now. And, you know, there was a moment where in one of my books, about five books back, I finally felt able to murder one of my characters. I suppose that was a jump.
Did you feel terrible? I mean, you always think of J.K. Rowling. I mean, she must have been traumatised writing the Harry Potter books because she was killing half of them off. I mean, is it hard to kill off a character?
Not if it's to move the plot along and to give the book purpose.
Save you a walk or a shower.
Oh, having said that, save me a walk or a shower. But here's an interesting one. Then she was gone two books back. I kept one of my characters alive because I wanted to give the reader a happy ending. And my editor read it and said, no, you have to kill her off. So clearly on that occasion, I did have trouble killing her off and I wanted to keep the readers, happy.
It's funny listening to you because we had a guest earlier on who we've a regular guest on the programme called Dr. Kelly Fitzgerald, who talks about Irish myths and legends and stories that we might very well have forgotten that were passed down in folklore. And they're forever full of mystery, murder, intrigue. Today's story, to give you just a very brief synopsis, there was a woman standing on the end of a young man's bed every night for the end of a year. She drove him mad and she eventually found out that she was some kind of half swan living on the side of a lake and he became a swan and they flew off together. I'm not giving you inspiration for your next novel, but isn't it funny how storytelling really hasn't changed that much over the years? There always has to be something just a little bit out there and a little bit of misery to drive the story forward.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. I mean, it is. You want to unsettle and unnerve and make people question everything, really. And that's what keeps people turning the pages and wanting to know what happens. It's wanting to know if they're right or wrong or if they're imagining things or, yeah. So no, absolutely, that's exactly right.
A question from a listener, just to finish up, if we can, Lisa Jewell. I've always wondered why authors like your guest, what authors like your guest read while they're on the beach, or do they do the crossword or an adult colouring book?
I read thrillers really on the beach. Yeah, I take exactly the sort of people who buy my books to take on holiday. I'm that person that buys similar books to take on holiday and, try and gobble as many books up as I can while I'm away.
Well,
when I'm trying to read at home, I always fall asleep.
Well, you can fall asleep on the beach as well. You just turn into a lobster. Lisa, well, the good news is when you are going on your holidays next, you will see the family upstairs on the shelves of W.H. Smith's or whatever bookstore you have in the airport, because it went
I shall stroke them as I pass them.
Exactly. Claudia Carroll was saying the other day she got very excited. Somebody picked up her book in W.H. Smith's in London, and she went up and she said, "I'm thank you so much for buying my book." I said, "Oh, are you Kathy Kelly then?" And it broke her heart. So don't do that. Okay, that's the advice I'll give you this morning. Lisa, do enjoy. The book is out now. It's called The Family Upstairs. Thank you so much for joining us from London. Lovely to talk to you.
Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.